Okay, you're welcome back to the programme. In studio, we have Brendan Devenny. Good morning, Brendan. How are you getting on?
Greg.
Good to have you in. What's the crack?
Good to see you. All good, yeah, all good.
Another good day at the office in Celtic Park?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, back to back, coming thick and fast. Probably didn't have the same entertainment value because the two teams mirrored each other. It was took a while to get going, but because these games are so tight and close, that said, I suppose three down at half time, it took a big effort for us to come back and level Tyrone with three up again. So there was quite a lot of guts shown from our lads. There's just something about them and the bit of belief. I don't know. At no stage, don't give up.
It's playing just
to come back.
Yeah.
I thought we'd come back, you know.
Because we've been slightly conditioned to sort of maybe feel that the heads can drop in the third quarter or, you know, something along those lines. That's not evident in Donegal at all now.
We were beat by 9 points by Tyrone last year. You know, that's, we all know the changes that have happened, but they've happened so dramatically now. You know, winning the league and coming into the championship, there was so much talk about Derry. I think it can be hard to lift it again because we were so tuned into them. We weren't sure who we were going to be playing next. So, you know, you had a week then to prepare for that. And, you know, Tyrone then had sussed out. Obviously, they didn't want to get caught out in the kickouts. We'd done so well off them. So both teams backed off each other a bit. And so it was a lot of handball stuff in that. But listen, it depends who you look at. Listen, from last year, let's say, look where we are. We're in a brilliant position. We're back in the Ulster final. If you love football, there's no kicking of the ball. It's football. But listen, if you're weighing it up, we want to be in the Ulster final. We want success. You've just beaten two of the best teams in the country.
Look, it's like in snooker, you could have a player that plays very defensively, or in boxing, you could have a Floyd Mayweather that fights on the back foot. I think in sport, you know, if you love the game, you kind of will accept whatever's there put in front of you. A lot was made by some about where this team was in terms of its development, you know, but I think yesterday proved that even in the, you know, less than a year Jim McGuinness has had the team, conditioning is excellent. Now, I'm open to correction on that, but from a bystander, it looked like that too. And tactically too, very sound. Whatever McGuinness wants on the line, it happens on the pitch. So, you know, both. So we're not as far behind the likes of Derry, I think, as some, you know, that they were a team 3 or 4 years ahead of us. I think that's been put to bed, has it?
Yeah, it would be. It'd be interesting to see if we played them again. I think Derry, what's happened, if you look at the game, I'm looking at the bigger picture here. You get the Croke Park. Does a defensive tactic work against the better teams, which really aren't? It'd be a Dublin or a Kerry or whoever. And that's where Derry had gone to. They had realised this. And when we get to Croke Park, we have to score X amount. And they played that tactic against us in Ulster. And we're very good at what we do in terms of that. So, listen, when Donegal's first league game, we pushed Cork high up the pitch. We attacked them. We overturned the ball. And we're blocking up the channels. And I was like, wow, what's happening with Donegal? This is exciting. So it's not as if I don't think Jim has that. The team has that other style of play. We just, I think in Ulster, this tactic is defence first. Particularly, you know, as I say, where Donegal are growing back from last year. It's the sensible way to play. Now, will there be another style from Donegal when we have the group stage of the championship? I think there needs
to be. But that's what Jim McGuinness has in his arsenal, you see.
Yeah.
Were you concerned where the scores would come from? Because I know it almost sounds ridiculous, but if you take the goals out of the game against Derry, right, it's a low scoring game points-wise. Did you have any concerns going into this game that we'd be able to score enough points to beat Tyrone?
Well, we had actually outpointed Derry in the league. Donegal scored a lot of points in the league. I think they were averaging 18 a game. I think what happened with that game, Greg, when you get goals and you can kind of control the game, it changes the whole mindset of the team, and they don't maybe have to go for it as much. You know, we're obviously playing with so many players. Like, they're literally 6-7 half forwards in there. All of them can score. Literally everybody in the pitch. McCall come up, of course, and at that equaliser yesterday. So, you know, everybody's contributing on the scoreboard. So I think just different games will suit different ways of playing, but certainly our percentage rate was very high in the league. And that was probably the big disappointment in that first half. You know, when Thompson hit that point after 22 minutes, the next 9 attacks we had, you know, there was three balls dropped short and 5 wides. And that's why you look at Jim again and his backroom team in that, you know, we'd lost our composure. And Tyrone were in the driving seat, because on those types of games, if you have a 3-point lead, you can boss it.
Mm.
And so I think you've seen a very different Donegal in the second half of the game. That goes back to Jim and the boys getting
plan B, plan C. The focus, it's cool that we have
getting
that
the
now.
Focus back. Now you could say, if I'm from a Tyrone camp, you know, when they were a point up and we're sitting deep, you know, they could have kept the ball, and McKernan went for a shot in the left foot, very, very low percentage shot. If you're touring the Tyrone camp, you're thinking, they recycle that ball, they could come in and out. Now, because they have Morgan, he basically is an outfield player, you can't keep the ball. Mm. Unless Donegal squeeze him, and they do, you could maybe try and expose him. So I think from Tyrone's perspective, in that them moments, we think we could have won that match, but certainly once... I think the second half we played much better, and extra time we were by far the better team.
An all Division 2 final. Armagh, from what I watched the game, I thought they were not lucky, because I think you make your own luck, but they'll be glad they got through that game, and it could have been very, very different. But you would never underestimate any Ulster team. You'd do so at your peril, wouldn't you? Mm. But how do you think, there's a bit of time to recover now. Is it May 9th? Mm, how do you think that game's going to go?
Yeah, Greg, it's going to be...
You'd be hard to back against on the goal, wouldn't it?
It's going to be... Listen, Greg, it's going to be very much like we seen yesterday, because Jim, I think in many ways with the kick-out to Derry has probably, you know, spooked a few people. McGeaney will not want to fall into any traps of Donegal's, so both teams will back off each other, but like we seen yesterday, and it'll come down then to those bits of brilliance, bit of individual talent, and as we said, that bit of composure that we were lacking the first half that we had in the rest of the game. So... I can't see... Armagh have a physically very strong team. They can powerfully go after you.
But we're strong too.
And it would be brave. Yeah, but you've seen with... Particularly with the likes of Turbid and Mernon and their midfield in that in Croke Park, when you've seen them on the inside, they had a huge height advantage over us at times. But I don't think they'll use it, Greg. Now, if they were brave and they went for it, it's that risk, Greg, that if that backfires, McGeaney gets the blame. So your automatic reaction is play it safe, and it'll be a bit like yesterday's game. But listen, I still think we'll go into the game probably a slight favourites, because I think we should have beat them up in the league game in Armagh, and we cope well with them in the league final. We were missing a few lads as well.
It's remarkable that we're having this conversation, isn't it, that we're going into an Ulster final as favourites after such a short period of time. Now, I think in fairness, we've mentioned it on this before, and I think it's right to do so. There was some steadying of the ship before Jim came in, I think. You know, he didn't come in to take over Donegal at its lowest ebb, in fairness to his predecessors. But even with that in mind, it is quite remarkable that he has what he's achieved with this team, and what the team themselves have achieved, because the players have to be able to respond to the instructions as well, don't they? Yeah. So, you know, it's not just Jim McGuinness. I think it's a squad of players that the belief that they have is great. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Listen, there's a talented bunch there, and you can see what he creates is a complete team buy-in. So you look at it yesterday, the whole team's defending as one, and then they're basically attacking as one. And I think if you look at it from last week, Derry got disjointed, became individuals. Tyrone didn't want that to happen yesterday. Mm-hmm. So it both teams are trying to nullify each other's threats first. And I guess it comes back to that thing when you see exciting football and you see teams going after each other. You know, there's so much at stake here that both teams will fall into that defensive shape. But whereas Jim now has installed, you look at the fitness and the energy and the... Like, as I said, there's something now, even there's a bit of an aura about Donegal, which is brilliant from a fan's perspective.
Cause, well, you can hear the fans as well, too.
You don't, as I say, I didn't think in that second half, even when we had three down the second time, I still thought we'd come back, you know, and I suppose that's part of Jim's whole thing, that he gets that belief and that buy-in.
Right, obviously you were up at the game, you've interviews from the game, guests on the show as well, Rory Kavanagh, Enda McGinley, Owen Mulligan. So that is a great lineup. What else is up for discussion, or are you just going to throw it all over?
Listen, the Hurlers had a brilliant win over Monaghan and the Nicky Rackard again, playing Roscommon next, which is probably one of their rivals for the overall tournament. It could end up the two of them lashing it out. You know, Donegal minor ladies lost in the Ulster final, and so did our minor footballs lost in the championship to Down as well. So we'll be covering a bit of ladder under 20s. Obviously lost to Derry last week in the semi-final as well.
That was a heartbreaker.
Yeah, it was tough. It's been tough. It hasn't been good in underage there for our teams. But we'll be looking a bit of that. To say, we spoke to a load of players after the game, myself and Oshie in there yesterday. So
Plenty of content.
Yeah, plenty of content. It was very different from the Derry game, you know. There was such a buzz. I think it was a kind of relief yesterday we won the match. Very different from the Derry one. But listen, we're through anyway. 2 weeks to recover now, Greg. And listen, back to
Clovis. Are we a top eight team yet?
Top eight team, yeah. I think we definitely are.
Yeah? I called it says, Tyrone scored some handy frees. Was this from Donegal's indiscipline or poor reffing?
Yeah, I thought so the refing, Colley was a
bit... What you gain on the swings, you lose in the roundabouts.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I thought there was a couple of tough calls on us, all right. But again, then, you're looking at it from a Donegal perspective.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Listen, the week before, we gave away Harlenny frees, and it was disappointing because those frees and those long-range kicks from Morgan kept Tyrone taking over at times as well. But listen, all food for thought.
And taking points from distance, are we not doing that? Do we not have the players to do that, or...?
Yeah, listen, I think we're as good as anybody else out there. I just say, I think we had maybe, I know going into the end of the game, maybe at 14 wides or so, we had much higher wide count than Tyrone had, but some days you get that. Like, yeah. I don't think there's anything up with her, because I say our percentage was high in the league. I think it was just one of those kind of sticky days. Now, Tyrone did make it difficult. There was loads of bodies back in that as well, which makes it hard to get a shot away. You're under pressure in that, but I certainly think that that'll improve going into Armagh.
Who was your man of the match?
I know that.
Do you know the image Morgan in my head? My head is the ball, McHugh getting the ball and just running out of defence. That sticks with me, you know.
He's
the man you want to. Because in your head, and I don't know, in my head, it's like 17.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I know.
And then, you know, who do you want to get that ball and run out when you need someone to? He's the man.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm not saying that's necessary. But man of the match, who it's easy for you to
listen, pick out. Listen, it was given to Morgan by the co-com there.
Which is a bit weird. Not weird in that I'm saying it's the wrong thing to do, but then he has to do a post-match interview as the man of the match on it from a losing
and
team.
Listen, it was a kind of tight game. I had no issue with that. You know, I know it normally goes to the winning team, but... listen, he played well. Matty Donnelly was very good for them as well. But I thought, for me, Jason McGee, was one of our... But listen, we had a couple of standard players, Ryan McHugh, you know, Niall O'Donnell, fellas that got all contributed handsomely. I thought just Jason McGee, because of his points that he kicked and some of his fielding, he's become such a leader for us. I would have given it to him.
Good times. All right. So interviews from the game, Oisin and Brendan interviewed, obviously, all those people you would expect, and other greats from the game, Rory Kavanagh, Enda McGinley, Owen Mulligan. It's a show not to be missed. It never is one to be missed. It's live just after the 7 o'clock news and will be available as a podcast not long thereafter. And you can listen to the DL debate this week and every week in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. Brendan, good to have you in. Thank you very
much
indeed. Okay. A caller says, I have to admit, I got up and went for a walk during the second half of the game yesterday. It was boring and lackluster. Not the type of football game that anyone should have to watch. So Donegal won, great, but I couldn't care less who won if this is what a championship game has descended to. You see, I don't see it like that, but you see, it's subjective, isn't it? And people want different things from different sports. You know, as I say, you can make the analogy that, you know, say in boxing, people aren't content unless there's a knockout, but then other people like the defensive pugilism. So everyone's going to have their own opinions, and I don't think there's a right or a wrong, which is great that everyone gets to express them. A caller says, it is disgusting that Frank has been abjectly let down by the county councillors and the council executive. They've had a decade to prepare for the impending defective blocks disaster. They have over 1,000 council houses affected by defective blocks and are also aware of the thousands of private homes affected. Yet they've only built a handful of social houses, no modular homes and no plans to deal with the housing issue. It's a talk shop filled with councillors taking in expenses on various committees rather than beating down the door of the council executive to deal with the crisis, vote them all out. Well, in fairness, a lot of the councillors work very hard on this issue. I think particularly those in the sort of Letterkenny, Milford, Inishowen area, not exclusively, but particularly. And what they can do is somewhat limited as well, if the truth be told. But I'm not here to defend them. I'm just here to try and strike a little bit of a balance where one needs to be. Earlier this AM, while travelling, I heard your heartbreaking interviews. Several years ago, IDP set up a subgroup to bring together Inishowen community and statutory services to review and expand local responses to meet some of the needs of families and homeowners in this long drawn out crisis. The group still meets.
one of our first actions was to write to the chief executive of Donegal County Council requesting information about the county's emergency plan for defective block homes and families. We wrote several more times. There was no reply to any of our requests. That comes in from Tony Devine, who is a Sinn Féin candidate in the local elections. A caller says the rise of the far right is disturbing, yet it's easier now to organise with the help of social media. Those who attack democratically elected representatives use the homeless crisis to target properties. They may try and give an impression that they stand for the Irish, but in my opinion, their agenda is anarchy. And that is that listener's opinion. Morning, Greg. Listening to your caller, hope this is a wake-up call for the SDLP voters in Derry and surrounding areas when the next election comes around. Thank you. And that was Councillor Barr, who was... It's not really been explained as to how he and his fellow councillor were overlooked for the mayoral position. That texter is so right. Government paying out money willy-nilly for non-Irish people and poor Frank getting no help makes me blood boil. Something has to be done. Yes, and I get your point that this is going to be an ongoing issue. Does Donegal Council have a heart at all? I doubt it. Thank you. Well, let's see what they come up with. But I appreciate your text there. Greg, very sad listening to Frank. No country for old men, indeed. Every day older people are being sidelined. They can fall off trolleys in A&E and no one notices. What is Senator Blaney and all the county councillors going to say to Frank at election time shortly? But come to think of it, Frank doesn't have a front door, is going to be homeless, a sad disgrace. The irony that there is not going to be a door there to knock. We've been shouting about a crisis in our schools and health services for the past 2 years due to the large amount of immigrants arriving in Ireland, but Niall only speaks of it now when he's in the middle of an election. Has anyone noticed election posters while out and about? Recently I saw one that had vote number one on it. Surely that's not allowed. No, not yet. 6 weeks, isn't it, from polling day? But it shouldn't have vote number one on it. And you can listen, if you want to be clever, you can work around it. You can have them up, but they're not election posters. But I haven't actually seen election posters up yet. Back to football here. Greg, great win yesterday for Donegal, but it was a bit disheartening to see the Palestinian flags being waved every time that there was a score from Donegal. Shouldn't the match be all about Donegal and Tyrone and leave the politics out of it? What happened in Gaza is terrible, but I think that our GEA matches should just be about GAA. Well, it's a toughie. You know, people are using that opportunity and I suppose the television cameras to have their say. I don't know what the general feeling is out there. I am indifferent, really. The flags don't bother me or one way or other. I understand why people are moved to want to do something along those lines, but let us know. It's important what you guys think. 086 60 25,000, would you prefer to see any sort of protest away from the sporting ground, or do you think it's a perfect opportunity to have your say? Right, the number of claims relating to collisions caused by drivers who were either uninsured or untraced rose 11% last year. The Motor Insurance Bureau of Ireland says 1,927 claims were received during the year. That's up 187 on 2022. David Fitzgerald's Chief Executive of the Motor Insurers Bureau of Ireland, and he's with us now. Good morning to you, David. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Nice to be talking with you again.
Right. What is the story here? Why do you think we're seeing this rise in the number of claims in collisions caused by uninsured drivers?
Well, with uninsured driving claims up 11%, Greg, it's likely because of an increase in uninsured driving generally. When we did research at the end of 22, we found that 1 in 12 private vehicles were driving uninsured and that we had the second highest level of uninsured vehicles in Europe. So I suppose it's no surprise, unfortunately. There is some good news, I suppose, to share as well. Whilst this is a big problem and it's very concerning, particularly, you know, when we consider that we're all paying for it. So the cost of compensating the victims is funded by law-abiding motorists because we're funded by a levy on motor insurance policy. So effectively, uninsured drivers are taking millions from the pockets of you and me and adding an average of 30 to 35 euros to the cost of a motor insurance policy. But as I say, there's some good news in that the Gardaí have new technology to clamp down on uninsured driving. So we're now providing the Gardaí with the insurance details of 3 million vehicles on a daily basis. And they're using that with mobility devices and cameras in road policing cars to quickly scan a license plate, and they now know within a matter of seconds if the vehicle appears to be insured or not.
Yeah, and I think the more awareness there is of that, the more likely we are to see people not wanting to risk it. You know, even, and it's highly illegal, but even reproducing insurance documents or keeping them in on the windscreen when they're not valid. David, is it? We don't have a figure, do we, of what percentage of these drivers believed they were insured, but were uninsured because of modifications or misunderstanding. It probably is so insignificant it's not worth digging into, or is it? I don't know, David.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's a significant issue. There were some people, which the Gardaí is starting to catch now, that were forging insurance certs. So, you know, photocopies of other people or things that they digitally altered. So they're not fooling the Gardaí anymore. And they, you know, they're very active on Garda Twitter in terms of, or X, I think it's called now, in terms of putting up those stories. So people who are trying to forge their way out of insurance or maybe cancelling their insurance but hanging on to the disc, they're getting caught now under this new digital process because it's being updated every evening.
And these figures, are they more, slightly more interesting because to some extent they remove the level of policing out of the equation, don't they? Because these are collisions that Gardaí are called to and that we know about. In other words, we can't look at a county and go, well, there's more Gardaí and more detection comparing it to another. Or perhaps we can, I don't know, David, but these seem to sort of almost strip that out of the situation.
Well yes. These are actual claims, so they're not detections but county by county. So I know the Gardaí are starting to do some reporting on that. I don't have those stats in front of me. We're focusing, as you say, on the collisions, the accidents caused by uninsured vehicles or hit-and-run vehicles. So it's giving you a good feel county by county. I suppose it's not surprising in terms of the largest numbers. We've seen them in Dublin, Cork, Limerick, Kildare, Galway, big population centres. And then there is a bit of regional variation. But a 11% rise is pretty significant. And, you know, we're very happy we've worked with the Gardaí to invest in this technology because, you know, it's important when you see the level of uninsured driving rising up to that level.
As you mentioned, the insurance companies uploading daily a lot of information to An Garda Síochána. Do you know if the driving licence status of the policyholder is included in that? Because we did see quite a lot of people detected driving unaccompanied, for an example. I'm thinking of someone with a learner permit driving unaccompanied. Does the information that the Gardaí have access to, you know, it flags they're a learner driver and maybe it can be observed whether they're driving on their own or not?
So driver licence number is the next phase of the project. So we're on track to deliver that to the Gardaí in December. So the initial focus was on the vehicle registration numbers and then details of the drivers that are actually insured on that. And then there'll be detail of driving licensing information to follow in the next phase.
Okay. And just finally, there are certain things that sort of people, the general population, don't necessarily view very badly until they're affected by it, you know, like as if this is a victimless crime, you know, someone. But the bottom line is the general law-abiding public is actually picking up the bill for these people driving uninsured and being involved in collisions. So the victim actually is the person that might think there is no victim.
Exactly. We're all paying 30 to 35 euros to cross-subsidise, you know, these uninsured drivers. So it's not a victimless crime. And then, you know, if they are caught, you know, the penalties are quite severe. It's 5 penalty points. The Gardaí will seize your vehicle so you can be left by the side of the road. It's a mandatory court appearance. You're looking at a fine of up to 5,000 euros, possible jail sentence. So it's, you know, it's really not worth taking the chance anymore, particularly with this new Garda technology. You're more and more likely to be caught now. And it's a matter of seconds for them to determine the insurance position now. It's a potential to be a real game changer, Greg.
Yeah, I think so. All right, David, thank you for your time. David Fitzgerald, Chief Executive of the Motor Insurance Bureau of Ireland. There were 1,927 claims, I beg your pardon, received during the year. Of those, just 47 were in Donegal, by the way, which I'm not sure how that compares to the year previously, but when you look at the figures nationally, of course, population centres, you're going to see bigger figures, but still 47. And these are people actually that were involved in collisions that were caused by uninsured drivers. So 47's one a week, bar the shout, isn't it? So it's not insignificant. Right, 086 60 25,000 is the text number. We're still looking for what part of Inishowen you'd like, you recommend. It's your must-go-to spot. We're going to be talking about Visit Inishowen. It's a tourism initiative, of course. On Facebook, Charlie says, Jimmy's winning matches, Jimmy's winning games. I can see Sam looking over his shoulder again. You'll excuse me for not singing it to the... I wouldn't put you through that. Charlie, settle yourself now. We need to manage our expectations. We've won a couple of games. We've Armagh, and then let's talk about what comes next. I don't know if Sam's looking over his shoulder again anyway, but I love the optimism. Now, you're very welcome back to the programme, and it is time for Monday Focus. We have two guests in studio with us. Lisa McLaughlin, manager of Go Visit Inishowen. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks so much for calling in. Your first time in studio with us, is it?
It is.
Yes, I think so. More familiar with Lorna McLaughlin, the musical director of Inishowen Traditional Choir, also a member of the Henry Girls. How are you, Lorna?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you so much for calling down to see us. Right, Inishowen Night in Malin on Sunday, May 5th. Who wants to tell me a little bit about that?
Lisa.
Lorna.
Excellent work, Lorna. Okay, Lisa, let's go.
So yeah, Sunday night, it's a candlelight concert featuring the wonderful Inishowen Triad Choir, which Lorna and Grace Toland lead up. She can tell you more about the choir. Uh-huh. The Inishowen Harp Ensemble and a newly formed group, Tradan, and a group called Indie Celtic. They're from India and Ireland. They met in the Himalayas. And they'll be joining us on the night to sing, learn some of the songs from the Inishowen choir. Yeah. And then the choir have learned a song from a Madagascan song. Yeah.
Mm. And there's an arts display beforehand as well. So this is real a great platform for all a lot of the artists that we're blessed with here and those that have arrived here.
That's right. There's going to be an exhibit in the hall that evening with local artists that have been inspired by all the wonderful Inishowen landscapes. Yeah.
Must be wonderful as an artist, Lorna, you know, to be part of the fantastic community we have here already, but also be able to sort of interact and learn and jam with others from all over the place.
Oh, it's great, yeah. Because I moved back from Dublin in 2020 and I kind of wasn't, you know, I've always been working with the Henry Girls, and that, you know, whether it was in Dublin or wherever, it was always happening. But whenever I moved back then, this just kind of presented itself to me. I hadn't actually planned to be working with the choir, really. It came out of a project called Inishowen, which was a project by Inishowen Traditional Music Project, which just, they commissioned Martin Turish from Alton to kind of arrange all the music from Inishowen into five suites, or into a suite of five movements, and then that was just an incredible project. We had 70 in the orchestra, and there was 50 in the choir, and that kind of culminated in a performance last year in January. We went to the National Concert Hall in Dublin, and it was a sold out concert, and President Higgins was there, and we got a standing ovation, and it was just an amazing experience.
How it all come about too is just like not bizarre, but you know. The everything that led to that, you know?
Well, that was because Inishowen Traditional Music Project now, which would have Roisin McGrory and Clodagh Warnock at the helm, and there's lots of different people there on the committee as well, but they kind of, they had this idea, they contacted the Arts Council and presented the idea, and they got the funding to do it. And then I think it was great for everybody in the area because we kind of got to delve into the amazing musical history and heritage that we have, like that not everybody was aware of, including myself. You know, I know we have a great music scene and there's lots of great traditional music, but like the we got to delve into the Hinnerea Galway song collection, which I wasn't aware of really, and it was just such a positive, brilliant experience, and it was sort of coming out of COVID as well. So the way people united was something I hadn't actually seen that level.
I know what you're saying, but then people got a taste of it and they didn't want it to end there.
That was it, yeah, because I was kind of drafted in as the leader of the singers of that project, and then that was the end. It was over. My job was done, and then you could just tell people really wanted to continue, like they wanted to keep singing. So then that's when Inishowen Traditional Singer Circle stepped in with there's a great group there. There's loads of people, too many to mention them all, but like Grace Toland would be kind of at the helm, and she's now they've taken the Inishowen Trad Choir under their wing, and it's going absolutely great. So it's very exciting, and for me, who I just love. Well, I love singing, I love harmonies. It's just like perfect, and then it's like this kind of
yeah.
It's
but heaven. There's also there's an important thing. There's yeah. an important thing going on here as well, too. Though, is there? In that, you know, very easy things can be lost, you know, to time.
Yeah,
you know,
of course, yeah.
It can happen in a generation. So mm-hmm. there's a role here in sort of archiving, recording, sort of,
yeah.
you know, making sure that what is traditional to Inishowen is there for future generations.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, these two organisations are doing a fabulous job of that, like between the Traditional Music Project and the Traditional Singer Circle. They both have websites and they both have archives there that anybody can, they can go to the website right now and delve into what's there. So it's it's great, and it's very intergenerational as well. Like in the Inishowen project, we had people as young as 14, I think,
mm-hmm.
and then people right up into, well, I don't know what age, but
yeah, well, sorry, go low, don't go high.
Yeah, so
the person might self-identify.
But it was brilliant, and there's great things going on there at the minute, and so this is just a really great night to celebrate all of that, and it gave us something to focus on as well.
From your perspective, too, Lisa, and I'm going through the guide, but it's as much a book as it is a guide, almost, right? Because there's an awful lot of stuff in there. But the job is to get people to visit Inishowen. You're in the lucky position in that you know they're not going to be disappointed, right? So how do we get them up here in the first place? Because we know they're going to leave with their jaw on the ground, you know, mm-hmm. whatever they want to sample, wherever they want to go within the peninsula. It's got so much to offer. So it's getting people up here or even from other parts of the county in there.
That's right, yeah. And that sort of was the purpose of the new visitor guide, which you just got a copy of. The guide, I sort of saw the need for it to be more of a reference book this time, so that it's, if you like, a one-stop shop for visitors when they arrive to see the rich history and cultural heritage of Inishowen in one place. So we've worked with and collaborated with local historians to put together the history, the rich history of Inishowen, the, you know, everything from the industry of textiles, mm-hmm. agriculture, maritime, folklore, ancient arts and crafts, and music, of course, which is the reason for this event next week. And Jennifer Doherty, you know, worked tirelessly on putting together the accessible monastic sites mm-hmm. in Inishowen, mm-hmm. The Mass Rocks, the Holy Wells, and contributed to other historical parts of the guide. And Sean Beattie contributed also with historical facts about the railway and the lace schools of Inishowen. And the Inishowen Maritime Museum contributed their fascinating history mm-hmm, mm-hmm. of the maritime legacy that we have here. And so it was all, you know,
it's an amazing piece of work, actually, in fairness to all involved. And also, too, if I visit somewhere, and I think I'm relatively normal, if I visit somewhere and you get an attachment to it, right, it's to its history and it's to its people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and that's what you get with this. Do you know what I mean? And you get it, that, because that's where the familiarity and the return comes to me. Do you know what I mean? I want to feel like I understand what's going on. And I know in Letterkenny they're doing more of that now to sort of talk about the heritage and the history of it, because that's what you want to take with you. You know, we've got a lot of the same shops in lots of different places and all that type of stuff, but you want to feel that you own a little bit, or you take a little bit of it home with you.
Yeah. And to answer your question about, you know, how do we, you know, I feel like Inishowen hasn't been marketed in the way that it needs to be, especially with the monastic sites. So we just sent a batch of these books out to Miami to the cruise ship convention. Mm-hmm. And the ask is that we create a digital copy of it. Mm-hmm. And that was the idea anyway, to put it online. We will put it on our website as a flipbook. And then the trades will also receive that flipbook. And then it'll be an online, it'll have an online reach, which will go further, you know, outside of Ireland as well.
Yeah, because Lorna, we talk about the Wild Atlantic Way. It's 10 years old now and hugely successful, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, there's almost like a Wild Atlantic Way within a Wild Atlantic Way on the Inishowen Peninsula, isn't there?
Yeah.
And you're not going to do it in a couple of days.
No, I mean, we've always had the Inishowen 100. That was something that was an accessible thing for tourists. Is that still a thing?
Well, you see, I think that in itself is whether it is or not, we clearly need to do more. Because if you're not 100% sure, I don't see that as a weakness. It means that, right, we need to
So, yeah. But to an extent, I mean, you can see the map around the peninsula. It's there, if not in name. Yeah, so that's clearly there. But now I know what you do know what you're saying, like something specific pushed marketing-wise. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of marketing done around the Wild Atlantic Way. In fact, in fact, Foulshare Ireland just announced, you know, figures around the amount of tourism that it is bringing into Ireland.
No, it's massive. It is 100% sure, but there's always, we can always go a little bit further. But it's been, I did see those figures and it's been remarkable. Mm-hmm. Two must-go areas for me, and Sean says a listener, are in my area, Swan Park, which has been a great addition, Riverside Walk, Fort Dunree, both beautiful, both great for walks. And there's more and more people want to go walking and cycling on their breaks as well. And there's work on greenways and all that type of stuff as well. So
really accessible.
How do we get to this concert then? Or is it all sold out? Or what's the story?
Well, we're actually, there's 30 seats left of this morning. So I know some people have been thinking that they can maybe get tickets on the night. I would advise to maybe go online before
that. I would get on that quick, actually. So that's the Inner Show night. It's in Mallon on Sunday, May 5th. And 30-odd seats left. That ain't many at all. That's not going to be... And it's a bank holiday weekend next weekend, a Republic holiday. Keep saying bank holiday.
I suppose just to say, Lisa and I are both from Mallon, so we're particularly proud of this night as well. We've been friends since we were toddlers.
But a lot goes up there too. There's the film festival is in Mallon, is it? Is it? I was up at one time.
No, that was, well, Guth Gaffa came to the documentary film festival, came
to Mallon
quite a few years ago.
Right, I remember I was up at that.
It was really, Mallon really suited the festival, like with the green
everything
there, and we loved it.
So you were saying, sorry, I cut across, it's a proud night for yous two, particularly as well.
Yeah, just at the Mallon Hall, like we would have had over the years, like in and out of the Mallon Hall for many, many
events. If it could sell stories, would that be good?
Oh, the Mallon Hall has, if the walls could talk, not only did we do our school plays, musicals and concerts on the stage, we danced with our parents at the Cayleys on a weekly basis. Amazing. And attended the Pioneer Discos.
And Feroiga Youth Club. I used to go there in the hall as well.
Played badminton. So,
but it's a beautiful hall right beside, you know, as you come into Mallon, you go across the bridge and then the hall's there. It's just fabulous.
It's really heavenly. It's like a film set. I mean, but much of Donegal is, isn't it? You know, like I was watching there a couple of months ago in The Land of Saints and Sinners, and quite rightly much was made of it because it was shot in Donegal, but I don't actually think it showed Donegal in all its beauty, if that makes sense, but we're always a bit parochial on things like that. The Doe Family Village is just fantastic. There's Wild Ireland in Muff, the Alpaca Way in Mallon, Mallon Head. You have to be careful if you say Mallon or Mallon Head. I've got in trouble with that before. On Green on Fort is spectacular. The Maritime Museum in Greencastle and Fort Dunree are worth a visit. The beaches are amazing. Ballyliffin Beach has a play park. Tulla Beach, Leenan Beach, Glenevan Waterfall, Mamore Gap. If you like walking, the Earth Hills are great and the scenery is unreal. Lots of these suggestions are free and worth a visit.
Absolutely. Wow. And can I just add that I really recommend locals to stop in at Go Visit in a Shone tourist office, because I really believe that a lot of people don't realise 100% what we have on our doorstep.
What proved that was the lockdown, where we were so limited in what we could do. I visited five or six places that I kind of knew I'd never been near. You know, so I agree with you. There's still an awful lot of us that don't realise what's on our doorstep.
That's right. Yeah. It's amazing. It's second to none, actually.
Can people get their hands on this brochure?
Well, it will be, Lisa, at the tourist office.
Okay.
Yeah. And we are distributing it out to our trades in the area. You'll see it in shops, bars, restaurants, and it's getting further reach as well. We're going to send it out to the airports and get it outside of Inishowen, but locally you can pick it up. Definitely pop into the tourist office.
Yeah, and when that PDF is available, whenever it's available to people, wonder, well, what can we do for our area? Share it in your forums,
please,
and your groups, and let people know what your beautiful area has to offer. Because I think the only way is up for Inishowen. There's great progress being made, but there's so much there. There's so much potential, Lorna.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm very much a proud Inishowen
woman. I know. I'm not looking for any counter arguments from either of the two of you, I think. Is it?
Yeah. Okay. And even with the Henry Girls, like whenever we travel around, like we play a lot in Germany, actually, and around the country. And we've been to America a good few times. So we always mention Inishowen, and we encourage people to come. So now to have something so tangible to, yeah. to give to people. Like we've, this is something we could take with us when we're on the road and, yeah. and continue our promotion of it.
That's actually something that I yeah. think doesn't get enough credit is the amazing musicians, especially particularly those with a sort of an international platform. We see it in West Donegal as well, bringing tourists that want to sort of understand where, what a song was written about or where it was written or where yeah. the people that wrote it come from. You know, that is actually quite a feather in our bow for tourism as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, we're lucky. We actually have a thing called Home with the Henry Girls that we do every year. We've been doing it, this is the eighth year, mm-hmm. and it's part of an Errigal Arts Festival, but that allows us to, you know, when we say come to Inishowen, it's actually a week with us doing songwriting in Mallon, so that's been a really lovely thing.
Can you imagine that as an experience? Like if you're into it, like it just would be heaven.
Yeah, it's amazing what the girls put on in Mallon yeah. every year.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You probably didn't speak a word to each other on the way down in the car, and now you can't say enough good about each other.
We were like, how many times are we going to get the word Inishowen into this interview?
I've done most of it. We talked about in and around 30 seats available for this concert. How do people get in touch? Because I know I'm hearing in my ear people are looking as to how they can
yes,
get one of those
I
seats.
Will give you the link, actually, if you Brilliant. Would like to put it
Course
on.
We will. Yeah.
The station's website, and it is if they go to govisitinishowen.com/concert.
There's a link there.
Yeah.
Okay, and there's not many seats available. Lorna, just run through the night for us one more time, if you don't mind.
So we have the Inishowen Harp Ensemble, and we have Tradan, which is Clodagh Warnock, Rosha McGorry, and Jolie McLaughlin, my sister. And then there's Indie Celtic, it's a duo. And they're coming up especially for the event. They're based in Carlow, but they're coming up especially. And then we're going to have the Inishowen Trad Choir. And we're going to have a collaborative piece at the end where everybody gets up. So it's going to be really special.
That's going to be something else,
yeah.
isn't it? All right, okay. Visit Inishowen
.com/concert.
/concert, all right. Not many tickets left for that. So if you want to go to that in the most beautiful setting as well, and it is a public holiday too, so you don't necessarily have to worry about Monday, depending on what job you're in. All right, brilliant stuff. Anything you want to add, Lisa or Lorna, or are you happy enough?
Oh, actually, after the concert, we're hoping to go to McLean's for some Inishowen cocktails.
What's an Inishowen cocktail, please? Uh-huh.
Well, we've created a cocktail list for that. One more thing I would like to mention, I love Inishowen Day on June 8th, yeah. which is a celebration of Inishowen, and we're asking local businesses and anyone really, bars, restaurants, to get involved in it. So we've created a cocktail list with Inishowen names on it, and they'll be wow. serving them on Sunday night in McLean's after the concert. But more to come on
the phone lines are just melted. I'm not even going to ask you for some examples, because Giffen and Inishowen, some of them could be dodgy, but we'll leave it at that, won't we? Kamir, listen, thank you very much for calling down. I really appreciate it. The best of luck on Sunday, but for the season as well. What are the signs, Lisa, in terms of how do you gauge what 2024 might be like? Is it in terms of bookings? Like, what are the accommodation providers and what have you telling you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit of an uptick, it seems. Mm. I mean, we're noticing behind the tourist office that there's, you know, the camper vans park mm-hmm, there. It's a mm-hmm. site for camper vans. And it may typically starts to pick up for the season. And we gauge it then from, you know, the mm-hmm. foot traffic that come into the office.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is the first port of call.
Brilliant.
For tourists.
And people still do like that physical call in too.
Oh, absolutely.
And hopefully we are seeing, and I think we are certainly in some parts, and hopefully all the extension of the tourism season, because that's really critical, isn't it? If we can get it from sort of, you know, St. Patrick's Day till, I don't know, Halloween. You know, I know some places are enjoying that kind of a span of a tourism industry, but we've so mm-hmm. much to offer, and the weather is, you know, the weather is what it is. You see tourists getting off buses and they're wearing the right clothes, and then we walk past
right.
in T-shirts freezing yeah. our knobs off. All right, Lorna McLaughlin, the musical director of Inishowen Traditional Choir, also a member, of course, of the Henry Girls. Thanks so much, Lorna. Lovely
Thank
to
you.
See you. And Lisa McLaughlin, manager of Go Visit Inishowen. Lovely to meet you and have you on. And
Me
we'll
too.
Touch base, I'm sure, regularly into the future.
Great.
We'll be back with more after these. Check out Highland Hub, by the way, on Facebook. We'll have a link up to
where you can buy your tickets for that event on Sunday night. Just 30-odd seats left, all right? So you'll have to be quick if that's how you want to spend your public holiday Sunday. Thought it funny yesterday at the game, and it's sort of kind of typical of we think in the moment, in that the Tannoy announcer had to point out that quite a few people apparently left their windows open in their cars. I hope none of you went back to a dodgy wet seat after the game yesterday. But hey, even with a wet bomb and a victory, isn't it, the journey feels a little bit shorter when you've won. Regarding the land of saints and sinners, did anyone else notice the galvanised cream feeder in a film supposed to be set in 1976? That was the only mistake that I saw. Brilliant movie. Well, there was a few geographical mistakes now, in fairness, but it is it's just using props and areas, but there's some strange journeys between different towns in and around that part of the world. A massive well done to Lisa and Lorna for their excellent promotion of Donegal from Jennifer McLaughlin Doherty, indeed. And as I say, when you've got a product like Inishowen, and I'm speaking, it sounds really cold, doesn't it? But I don't mean it like that. But when you've got the people that are in Inishowen, and then you've got the scenery and the sights, you know, it's an easy sell, isn't it? We just need to get people up here because we know their jaws will drop when they see what we have to offer. The Letterkenny Memories is on tonight in the Station House Hotel at 7:30. Everyone is welcome. I mentioned that again, but no harm giving it a second plug. Hi, Greg. How will Simon Harris know what migrants came from England when they get rid of their ID moving here? More bluff. Nothing can be done. England doesn't have to take any migrants. They're not in the EU, indeed. That is the problem. But they're hoping to strengthen it works two ways, okay? So it suits the British as well to come up with an agreement on Ireland on this, but this is seen as a win for Rishi Sunak with his Rwanda policy. Of course, you know, he struggled so much to get that over the line. It is over the line now. So he's saying, hey, it's working already, folks. They're not going to sort of move away from that message, such is the way politics and spins works, until after the local elections, because they're going to get a hammering anyway. Most, if not all, of the Gowanus commissioners were sacked down the years. Anybody remember Ned Garvey? Hi, Greg. It's no wonder the Donegal people are so angry with this government, their homes falling down around them. Hi, Greg. You never ask any politicians about how they will vote in the EU migration deal. Highland Radio is a vital public service, yet Highland apparently chooses not to report on the deal. You seem to have censored debate on the EU pact, which I find really quite remarkable in that that people believe that, because I wonder, do you listen to the show, or is this a text that's sent to every radio station? I'm not sure, because we spoke extensively last Friday, that the last time we were on air, we spoke extensively about the EU migrant pact. It's been voted through in the EU, and it's been pushed through the door. That's the way it's going. Of course, we're going to talk about who's going to vote in it and why. But I know all the politicians' stances on it already, to be honest with you. But if the public don't, I don't mind asking those questions either. We never shy away from that here. And there's certainly no censoring at all. And we were talking about the Migrant Pact, the EU Migrant Pact, and all of its potential, both good and bad, on Friday's show. If you want to listen back to the podcast, it was during the Friday panel. I was coming from the Donegal match yesterday on the Donegal to Derry Road, appalled in a manner to get AdBlue. There was no pump for AdBlue. I drove to Rafo, and there was no AdBlue in Convoy either. I had to drive to Ballybuffet to get a pump for AdBlue. I had to go a long way to get AdBlue. Why do all service stations not have AdBlue pumps? I don't know. Is AdBlue a thing going into the future? I had one car that required it. I only had to fill it up once, and I had the plastic container and spilled a half of it on the car, as you can imagine. I'm not really sure what's in it for. Is it worth petrol stations having AdBlue pumps? I really don't know, but I'd be interested to find out. Right, okay. That's why we have to leave it on the programme today. Thank you to all of you who have listened to the show, or if you choose to watch it, whichever, it's good. It's good to have you on board. Thanks to all of you who messaged and texted in as well. It's great to have you on board. We're back again to do it all again tomorrow morning from 9. Don't forget, every Tuesday we've got Community Garda Information, where you hear the latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána first here on the 9 till noon show, just after the 10 o'clock news. But for me, Greg Hughes, and Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show, assisted by Shannon Wilkins, we'll be back with you, as I say, tomorrow at 9, and John Breslin is coming up around the northwest after we get the news headlines at 12.